Hello and welcome to another Inside the Marnie podcast. My name is Matt and our guest for this episode has been a friend of mine for 30 years and it's Alison Schofield.
Hi Matt.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you very much. Thank you for asking me to be here with you today.
Well, thanks for giving up your time. And we've asked Ali onto the show to share her experiences of kind of working in the area in the early and mid-1990s. So, Ali, when and why did you come here?
So, I came here, Matt, in 1993. I had worked 2 years in Lesvos previous to that. So in 91, 92, I was working for one of the holiday companies and they were supposed to send me to Zakynthos. And in fact, at the last minute, they said there was a change and I had to come to Stupa. And I arrived here then.
Right. So that was a bit unexpected.
It was a bit unexpected, and when I arrived, it was sort of that, it was sometime in April, you know, just, I mean, the seasons were not as long as they are now. It was kind of late May to early October. Yeah. So it was quiet, it was colder, there was not many people around, and I kind of thought, where on earth am I?
So you still have quite vivid memories of that very first day and evening of being in Stupa in late April?
I do. I mean, I was 21 years old. I was 19 when I first came to Greece, 21 when I came to Stupa. And it all seemed, you know, just a little bit too quiet for me. The person that I was working with, I met that first day. They were a little bit older than me. And I was, you know, I'd been used to a couple of years in Lesvos partying and things like that. Obviously, as well as working.
Oh, yes.
And that first evening, I remember definitely going to Hippocampus restaurant. Do you remember that one?
I certainly do, but maybe some of our listeners don't. So where was it? Can you describe?
Yeah, so if you go from the school and you head on that little road straight down, so just before you get to Pefko and the view of the harbour, it was there on the right-hand side. And it had a big outdoor area, but at that time, because it was cooler, we ate inside. I remember being in there. And what were the owners called of that?
Wasn't it Nikos and Eleni?
Yes, that was it, definitely, yeah.
And their outside space, once it warmed up, was enormous. And I felt really sorry for the waiting staff having to carry, because I think there were kind of like three layers.
Yeah.
Basically down to where Vula's yesterday and today taverna was. It was roughly there.
Yeah, I think so. It was quite an expansive space, definitely, yeah.
So your first night was inside Hippocampus.
It was, yeah. So sat there having a meal with the person I just met who I was going to work with. And then the door opened and in flew this lady in a red dress, long blonde flowing hair. And it was I considered then for many years to be a very dear friend. And that was Clary Percival, who sadly is no longer with us, but was such a big part of Stupa and my memories of, you know, being together and being, you know, young and friends here and in the area.
So a kind of friendship was immediately formed.
Yeah, when she came in and she was just so bubbly and chatty and I just thought, oh, I've been saved. And I think we actually, that went on from there, from in Hippocampus up to the Mythos Disco up on the main road that evening and came out in daylight.
Oh, right. Well, maybe we'll come to sort of nightlife stuff a bit later. So let's go back to meeting people. First of all, the office. Were you in Dufexis?
So I worked for SunMed, and people will remember that was a very small Greek-owned company. Vic Vitar was the owner. And I worked in the Sunbeam Club. at that time. So I was an anti-Sunbeam. So we don't have a children's club. You know, there hasn't been one for many years.
That's
in
true.
Stupa now.
That's yeah. true.
So that's what I did. I trained as a nursery nurse in the UK. And so I'd done the 2 years in Lesvos and then came here to do the same job then. But our Sunbeam Club is where Dufex's Travel is now.
Right. So, but you weren't actually based in the office.
I wasn't at that. Well, we came in and out, you know, we looked after the children in that building, which is now Dufexis. And, you know, we did the airport days. Well, say days. I think there was probably one day a week at that time on a Sunday. Mm. But then I progressed from there. So I did 93 and part of 94 as an anti-Sunbeam. And then I progressed as a fully formed rep into the office, and the company at that time had been swallowed up by First Choice Holidays, you know, a bigger company, and it was across the road from Dufex's Travel, which is the sign's still there, K&S Travel. So I was based in that office.
So in the days of the Sunbeam Club, I imagine you were selling car hire and excursions to a bunch of 5-year-olds.
Not quite. More like walking round the village singing songs. And we had a song, actually, Everywhere We Go. And the kids would repeat after us. I've lots of memories of that. We did splash quizzes where we had dads against kids and throwing buckets of water if you got a question wrong. You know, so many different activities. The kids loved it.
It's such a good idea. Why on earth did it stop? And why don't current companies do it?
So the interesting point, and if people some people will remember this, and they will have forgotten about it, actually. But at the time, First Choice, they had a new element, a new arm to their company. I think it was called Free Spirit. And they actually were trying to make it adults only. And so it was this label of no go kids. And can you believe in a village like Stupa, they actually introduced this here? So
which is absolutely perfect for kids.
Absolutely perfect. So people were up in arms. Obviously, the tourists and many families who've come here for years were really upset about it. The accommodation owners were upset about it. You know, what's going on? And it only lasted, I think, for one season, that, and then they never reintroduced the clubs, because they First Choice then they had them in these massive hotel resorts in bigger areas.
Yeah. Okay, so going back to Clary P and your night in Mythos nightclub, which, as I said, we'll come to later. Who else did you meet in those sort of early days, weeks, months of being here for the first time? How easy was it to meet both expats and locals?
It seemed quite easy, if I remember. I mean, I was 21 when I came to Stupa. My initial thought was, oh God, my goodness, there's nobody around. But people sort of then started to appear as the season was started. So there were some other reps who came, some similar age, some, you know, older. I met your brother. I met Ned. He was out here.
Lucky you.
Antonia was here, who is a mutual friend of ours. Her mum and dad both lived here. And there were other people who were around. There were people of different nationalities. But also, there was a couple I remember who used to come down from Athens. They were Greek, and they'd come down and work in the bars every year. So it was almost like this, you know, getting together. So you got to know people through the years. But even, you know, the lads who were the Greek waiters who worked in the tavernas and the bars, we all mixed together. Mm. And we, you know, we were all friendly. A lot of them I still know, you know, a lot of the, a big connection, you know, as you'll relate to as well.
Yeah,
that we had from being here from a young age.
And that gang, where was the most used sort of meeting place?
So our local was definitely Steckies.
Yeah.
We used to nip down there from the office to get a sandwich at lunch. I think I lived on sandwiches at that time. I'll never be that thin again in my life. Sandwiches and beer and, you know, tequila shots. And then on an evening, we'd go there after work. So we might go there before we moved on to somewhere else. But there was, you know, I mean, Bob Barrow, who, you know, is quite famous in these parts. Bob came down in 93, the same summer as I did. And I, you know, remember, I've got photographs sitting in there with Bob.
In Stecky.
In Stecky, yeah.
Maybe some of our listeners will know the name Bob Barrow. But for those who don't, could you sort of just briefly describe who that guy was, who sadly is no longer with us?
Yeah. So Bob was English. He came out here. He got a pass. He's lots of stories. He'd been a policeman in his time. He'd actually worked not too far away from in Yorkshire, where I live now. And he'd been in the armed forces. He was a real character. He used to wear this straw hat, almost like he was a bit like a cowboy hat. This, you know, big laugh, and he played the guitar, and he worked in 93 in Acre Alley. He worked as a waiter.
That's right. Yep.
And then and inside then there were some steps right up into the kitchen. So it was awkward for the waiters in and out with all these plates and things. And often you'd hear this crash where Bob had dropped some plates, and then this cheer went up from everybody. And John and Ingrid were managing the place that year.
Okay, so two things there. Bob then moved on to work for Thomas Travel, didn't he?
He did.
And the second thing is John and Ingrid, some people may not know who they were.
So they were an English couple as well who were living here at the time. John, I understand, is still around.
He is. I see him sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, he's still around in the area. He was a great chef. So they were managing in Acre Alley, and then they moved up the hill towards Cologria, and the name of the restaurant escapes me.
I think it was, well, it's confusing, isn't it? Because he was Panorea. And then just round the corner on a left turn, looking over Cologria Beach, was Panorama. But I'm sure John and Ingrid was Panorea.
I think you're right. I think it was Panorea. I spent a lot of time in there. I used to go up there as well. I just felt comfortable in there. I used to do a welcome sort of meal evenings with my guests. In fact, in my English house on the balcony, the table and chairs came from that restaurant. The previous owners of the house, once the restaurant closed, they were giving things away or selling things off. So I've got a piece of that.
Piece of Panorea. Well, that's a nice connection. That's a nice connection. So you're eating there. You're having your sandwiches at Stecky. A bit of a hippocampus. Are there any other places you used to eat that simply don't exist anymore?
It's a lot more of the drinking places that I remember, to be honest, rather okay. than the eating places. We used to go up to, I remember we used to take the guests up to Verna in the Sky.
That's in Nehori, my village. Yep, we've just driven past it, yeah.
It is, and it was Angela who was the owner, and she still has studios down in Stupa, yeah. And she had a little van and used to take people up and down. But I clearly remember SunMed's 21st birthday, and there was a big party there, and I've got photos where I'm dancing on a table, probably shifter telly or some element of that Greek music. So, yeah, I have that stuck in my mind. But yeah. In my mind, they seem to be more bars than eating places.
Well, talking of bars, what bars existed back in those days that no longer exist?
So one of them in 93 was called Tropicana Bar.
Drinks are free?
Not quite.
Producer Jeff is in the room.
But Tropicana, it had this, it almost looked like a real 80s vibe, and I guess we'd only just come out of the 80s. So, I'm thinking, was it where Ageli Keys restaurant is now, or was it further down? But it was definitely on that strip, because next door to it was an ice cream parlour, not the the one that that's, you know, we have now. And I seem to think that name was Kiki's of the ice cream parlour. I'm not sure.
I would guess Angelica's was there, and where you're talking about were two. It was the ice cream parlour and...
Possibly, yeah, it was possibly. It seemed quite big inside. It was never very busy.
Well, didn't they have a disco ball in the ceiling?
They did, and that's what I mean about a real sort of that 80s kind of vibe, yeah. But I used to, in fact, we used to take the kids in there from the Sunbeam Club, not on an evening, of course, but we used to
do... A few shots of ouzo.
Yeah, we used to do little parties because my boyfriend at the time, my Greek boyfriend, used to...
Would that have been Vangelis?
It was Vangelis, yeah.
Yes, I remember him.
Yeah, so yeah, I had a Greek boyfriend, as you know, many of us did, and he actually wasn't from Stupa. He was from a village on the way to Kalamata, but he lived in Kalamata and he worked at the power station in Megalopoli.
That's right. That's a long drive. Yeah.
He always came to Stupa. He used to play volleyball on Kalogria Beach, and but he had a hobby as a DJ, and so he used to do the music in the Tropicana bar. And there was also a place before me, and I don't know if you remember this, called Happy Night, and he DJed in there. And I'm not sure if that was on the main road or...
I think that was the first. And I think it's roughly where the big supermarket on the main road is. It's somewhere on that strip. It was on the main road. And I think I only ever went there once, and I think it was too early. And there was literally one man and his dog. So that never became a sort of regular haunt for me. And it sounds like you didn't go there very often either.
I didn't, but Clara used to tell me about it. And I think she had some photographs of it as well. But when I met Vangeli. And I clearly remember that when I seeing him before we were ever met and introduced, and I was walking down to work. I lived at the first year in Oasis Apartments, which is just outside the village, and I had a pink bike as my transport up. I mean, I was fitter then, so I could cycle up and down this little Cindy bike to and from work. And I was coming down to work down the hill past where, you know, Stupa restaurant, and he was sat on a motorbike. He had a white t-shirt on, and jeans, dark hair, sunglasses, and I just
James
thought...
Dean.
No, I thought it was Tom Cruise in Top Gun. And I thought, who's that? You know, and then I think I met him, it was like the June Panayiri, and I was with Clary, and we were doing shift Atelli on the art bar bit of the Inachri Alley, yeah, on the thing, and Ingrid shouting, "Get down, you're gonna fall in the harbour," type thing. But it was that evening that we met, yeah.
Okay, so that's really nice to cover some of the bars and tavernas of that time. Paint a picture of the two beaches, and I suppose the first question is, which was your favourite beach back then?
It's funny because now I go a lot to Stupa Beach, but then it was Kalogria Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would work on a morning, and we worked kind of on an evening. So it was like, but the afternoons we had free. So afternoons would go down to Kalogria Beach, meet up with the gang. We'd play cards and things like that. We'd go in Paralos, and they had the barrels as tables, and we used to sit round those.
And that must have been very early days of Paralos, because so let's think about what bars and tavernas were on Kalogria then. So next to Paralos, there was nothing,
and there was Kalogria Taverna, Ren and Costa.
I
don't remember anything else.
Prigipas, Blue Chairs.
I don't remember that till later.
Certainly Almariki didn't exist,
no.
Did it? That was built by Demetris.
No.
So there's very few, weren't there, really?
But it was great sunsets at Paralos as well. If you went on days off, I would go and, you know, you'd sit on the wall there But yeah, we gathered there a lot. I mean, on Onkologria Beach, there were no, well, on either beach, there were no sunbeds. Everybody's going, oh, there's no sunbeds. But, and there was one guy, and he was called Tassos. He had dark curly hair, Greek guy. And he had a few red metal sunbeds. You could go and get one and drag it out. But we all used towels. We, you know, we weren't paying for sunbeds. And it was beautiful because it is an stunning beach.
Well, let's come back now to the modern day, and you've got your English house. Do you still go to Kalogria?
More often than not, we go to Stupa Beach because from our house, it's literally, it's 5 minutes walk down the hill, past Five Brothers, and we've got our little chairs and we go and sit there. You know, it's, there's, you know, I know it's controversial, but there is a lot of beds on Kalogria and it's hard to sort of find that space. Plus, it's a bit further to walk. I'm a bit older and got osteoarthritis of the knees and things up and down the hill.
I remember us lot as a gang. There was so much room. Everybody was playing bat ball. People were playing volleyball. There was never a scramble to find a patch of sand to put your towel down. And, you know, the modern demands, I guess, have created what the beach is now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way it is. But you could go down now. You can go down at, you know, early in before the season kicks off.
Sure.
You know, and certainly find space and things. But, you know, and the water's very cold, isn't it, though? Let's be honest.
Well, it will
be
now.
With the springs.
Yeah,
It's a bit hard to get beyond the ankles at this time of year.
So going back to your work, so you changed from Sunbeam. Did you call yourself Auntie Sunbeam?
That's what we were known as, Auntie Sunbeam.
Oh, that's why I didn't quite understand, because you said Auntie. Oh, it's a Yorkshire. Auntie? What? I thought you meant against. You were against the kids.
Not so. In fact, a lot of the children we looked after still come here on holiday. They bring their children, which makes me feel very old. Mm. And their parents have houses here. You know, they're friends. We meet up. We go for a drink. I can give a shout out to Jan and John Bortwood, to Judith and Pete. You know, those connections go on. And it's like when we all found this place, I always liken it to be the Bermuda Triangle, because people never leave. I've got friends, you know, people at home who I've worked with and things. They said, where is it that you were, or where did you go on holiday? And now they've been coming for 10 years, because it's like an entrapment in the money. There's something about it that's not like anywhere else in the world, I think.
And me and producer Jeff have had many conversations about that very issue. You know, what is it? Why is there this hook that, you know, especially in the 2000s, people will come out maybe for the first time for a two-week holiday and go home having bought a house. They loved it so much.
I remember Laurie and Margaret. They were guests of mine and they bought a house here. Laurie went on to do the tour guiding, sadly, again, no longer with us. You know, yes, so many people did that.
And so when you moved up from being Auntie to the full rep, obviously that was a totally different job. It must have been.
It was different. I was supposed to be more responsible, more grown up. So obviously you'd spend your time in the office in the morning, or almost like I liken it to a surgery. I'm a nurse now. And that, you know, kind of that helping people with problems was the same then as, you know, some of the jobs that I do now. So people would be able to drop into the office and, you know, with any of their accommodation problems. We had a welcome meeting every week. So you stand up there in front of, you know, maybe a couple of hundred people and telling them all about the excursions, places they could go if they hired a car and that sort of thing.
Ah, there you go. There's the commission.
Yes, I mean, I don't like to call it sales, because I loved the area so much that I would just talk about the places. In fact, one thing I did, you know, the coastal path down to Ayas Nicolas.
Which has just collapsed.
It has just collapsed, yeah. But then the concrete path didn't exist then.
No.
It was literally some, you know, people used to walk through the grass and stuff. And I took guests. We met like one morning every week or every 2 weeks at 8:30 in front of the Letron. And I would take them on a guided tour down there. And, I mean, we were literally on the edge of a cliff at one point trying to move along and... you know, with all these people. And I remember the company First Choice saying, "Oh, you must charge these people for this." And I was like, "No, it's just part of the area."
Yeah. But isn't a problem of being a rep that you're always contactable? I mean, did you ever have to deal with, you know, some insanely difficult or time-consuming problem, or were you lucky? Did it run smoothly?
It not always, no. And I love people. That's one of the things that I like doing in all the jobs I've ever done, is that communication element. But you know, some things never go right, and there's always problems with the accommodation, so you're having to deal with that. This is Greece, you know, things go wrong. There were no kettles at the time. I mean, shower curtains were a luxury. But I remember once being at the airport and people arriving off one flight. And we had a thing in those days called, it was allocation on arrival. So you paid for a very cheap holiday and you didn't really know which resort you were going to, which accommodation. And when somebody got off the plane, they come up to you and you're there with your clipboard, kind of that, where am I going? Some people came on that, and there was nowhere for them to stay. They hadn't been allocated anything. It was like an overbooking or something. I don't know what mistake. And I thought, well, where are they going to stay? What am I going to do? And I ended up, I was staying in quite a nice, I mean, I've lived all over this village and in some, you know, places, some nice, not so nice, but this was quite a nice one at the time. And it was sort of just down the road from where Athena's apartments are now.
Right.
You know, upstairs balcony. I sent them off for a drink and a meal, and I moved out of my own apartment and let them stay in my apartment for a week, and I went off to stay with a friend.
That's dedication. I'm not sure I would have done that, but I guess you had no choice.
I don't think many people
there.
Would have done that, but I just didn't want to take the flack of, it can get very busy, you know, when there's not rooms available. And so that was just one of the memories. I remember having accidents on the coach coming out of Cambos, that awful long corner.
Yeah.
The coach colliding with a car. It was a car and a trailer. Everybody off the coach, you know, searing heat. Are we going to get to the airport on time?
But I mean, we are talking very early doors, aren't we, of sort of mass tourism in this area kicking off?
Certainly in this area.
Yeah.
I'm so sure there was only one flight a week, and it might have even been just from Gatwick, then they introduced Manchester from the UK, and then that built more and more. And there were people, there was a holiday company from, I think it was probably Holland and Germany. That, you know, those are the areas I remember, but it wasn't on a particularly large scale.
But nevertheless, very, very different to what happened before, which would have been people struggling by bus from Athens, changing at Argos, getting to Kalamata, and then trying to work out, you know, so even though initially the number of flights may not have been that high, it still must have had an impact on the area. Did you ever get a sense from the locals of how this, okay, slow but very clear change that was taking place in their area?
I've never personally experienced or seen xenophobia. And I think it was sort of seen as progress, you know, in this place becoming almost holiday land. People had accommodations or opened accommodations, then people could open more, you know, restaurants, bars, things like that. So it was seen as, you know, economically viable, really. I never saw anything that wasn't positive, I don't think.
Yeah, me neither. I agree with that, yeah. So despite working, whether it was with the kiddies or as a fully-fledged rep or in a gift shop, did you have sort of enough free time to get out of the area, specifically Stupa, and sort of see a bit more of the broader Marni?
I did, fortunately. I mean, we always had one day off a week. That was the world of repping then. So Bob Barrow, we mentioned before. Bob took me on my first down the Marni excursion to Hieronymenos, if I can say that correctly. and he wrote one of the first books about the Marni.
He was
a real historian. He loved the history and so explained all these things, which helped me because in 97, I went to work for Babby Dufexis because Babby had opened up, I think he opened in 96, that Sunbeam Club had ceased to exist then. So he was a one-man band at that time, and now, you know, Dufexis Travel has grown and he's a very successful agent with lots of tour operators under his wing. But for Babby, one of the roles that I did was tour guiding. So I would go on the excursion bus. So I went over to Monanvasia, went down to Deiros Caves, down in the Marni. We'd do Cardamilly by night. Go off even over to the other side, to Coroni, Pylos, Methone, ancient Olympia. So I'm really glad that I got that experience because, you know, I know when people come on holiday, you have like 1 or 2 weeks of year. You just want to chill out and relax, especially if you're busy lives and working. So you want to just, you know, you want to do the beach and things. But if people do have chance, gosh, there's so much to see in this area, down in the Marni and Vathia with the tower houses. It's pretty unique, really.
Yeah, it is. I agree. Yeah. So when and it's great that you had the chance to get on a free bus, basically, for Dufexis and go to all these places. Okay, you're working, but you're seeing these places.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think of it like that, it was sort of quite a privileged position, I guess.
Okay, and we're getting to a question that I've been delaying, which is a little insight into the nightlife, because I think there are quite a number of sort of rumours about what exactly was going on. So maybe just talk us through which were your favourite haunts back in those days.
Okay, so thinking I was 21 when I came here, so I was in my... I like to think that because I came to Greece at 19, I grew up in Greece through my 20s. And at that time in your life, you kind of, you want to go out and experience nightlife and things like that. And what do? You're in a small village in Greece. But there was this sort of underground nightlife, atmosphere that... The tourists weren't involved in that. They weren't aware of it. They probably didn't want to be a part of that. But they were, just to kind of mention, so I mentioned Mythos before, and there was a place near enough next door to it, and I can't remember the name, and there were rumours of, how shall we say, ladies of the night operating within there. It was a bar within itself. And there were another couple of places roundabout as well. I'm not going to say, do you remember that, well, Matt, but do you?
rumours. I personally never made the effort to find out if there's any truth. I have to state at this point in the conversation.
Yeah, and there was bars like, so above Calogria there was Eprepe with the owner Yanni with the big moustache, and he had a very deep, lovely voice. And where else? We used to fly up and down the road at night on our... I progressed from the pink Cindy bike in later years to a little Mika Nike, a little turn and go moped and would fly down to Ayas Nicholas because there was Dia Yenis, of course. So between Ayas Nicholas and Pantazee, nightclub there, owned by Aris from Vesuvius Restaurant.
Yes, and I too was part of that crew that followed those paths. But I think stories about those nights could be the subject of another full podcast.
There's a lot more other stories there for that extracurricular scene that we were all part of.
Let's keep them secrets for now.
Okay.
So I guess a kind of as we wind down, when you finished working here, you then sort of changed career into healthcare?
I did, but immediately before that. So I worked for Babby in 1997, do Fexy's Travel. And I did a final season actually repping in Greece in 1999. I went back to Lesbos to revisit that. But in between that, in 98, I actually worked as cabin crew for Air 2000, and they were owned by First Choice Holidays. So I used to fly into Kalamata Airport, bring in the guests, the tourists who were coming here, and we stood at the top of the steps. And, you know, I had friends who were reps who were on the, you know, inside the building and couldn't get off.
No.
So, which was awful. It was an awful feeling that. And then I had to fly back to Manchester again. But yeah, but after I'd done with the tourism in 2000, I trained as a nurse, had a total flip, a career change, and I'm still, you know, in that industry now.
And so from that switch in career to now, where you are a homeowner, how regularly would you come back for just a holiday during those years?
So most of the years after I stopped being here, I came out to visit because I've still, you know, I've had friends who are friends now and that was here through all that time. So I would come out and visit them. Now, you know, I'm trying to expand the amount of time that me and my husband are kind of working towards that semi-retirement. So, you know, sort of a month here, a month there and things like that. So.
Right. And so was it every year, every other year or every 3 years? Or
it was
varied?
Every year to start with. And then I had a period of about, I think it may maybe have been 5 years, where I didn't come at all. And I went off to experience other places, you know, in Europe, in the Med, in the world. I did part of my nurse training in New Zealand. But it was always in my heart here. I know that might sound like a cliche, but it was something that pulls you back. And, you know, I everywhere I went, I always compared, oh, yeah, this is lovely, but it's not the money, you know. So I always knew that I would be back here.
Right. So over a fairly lengthy period then, you've been constantly coming here. Is it an easy question to answer? If I said, what changes have you seen and are they all for the good?
That's a really good point, actually. I mean, definitely, as you stand and you do that 360 look around, there's a lot more, you know, buildings occurred sort of like in the hills and things, and a lot more properties been developed. You know, things look a little bit smarter. Down in Ayas Nicholas, there's a lot more, you know, smart restaurants and things that there ever used to be. It's inevitable, isn't it? With the rise of we have the internet, we now have social media, we have Instagram. You only have to open, you know, Facebook and there's stupa groups and things. There's TripAdvisor. So years ago, people used to say, don't tell anybody about the money. the money stays inside the money, if you like. So we we didn't have that commercialization and that promotion, that marketing that's available today. You know, what are the top 10 beaches in the Peloponnese I saw the other day, and, you know, all the ones around the area popped up in. So I guess there's that. It's more, you know, being more well known. Is that a good or a bad thing? Some people would say it's not. But, you can't keep things secret forever. That happens throughout the world, no matter where you are. And a lot of people here will say, yeah, of course it's progress. And, if the economy is benefiting from it, then surely that is a good thing.
And I think it's been well managed. I mean, we don't have any 8, 9, 10 story hotels, do we, destroying
we don't it will never be you know of you know Benidorm. I've never been to Benidorm, so I'm not slagging it off. So but you know, those, so but like you mean, like in Spain you might get high-rise buildings. There's no jet skis here. It's
true.
Quite a protected area.
Yeah.
So I think it does retain its uniqueness, and I think it always will.
I do. Let's hope so.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, Alison, thanks very much. Thanks very much for your time and insights. And maybe we'll speak again in a little more depth about the underground night world that you have alluded to. But as is the custom, we finish every podcast with one simple question, which is, what three words would you use to describe how you feel about this area as it is today?
Home, happy, content.
Wonderful. Okay, well, thanks again.
Thank you, Matt.
And enjoy your home.
Thanks for listening, and please subscribe. Head over to insidethemanny.com to discover a whole range of exclusive content.